Good morning, and welcome to Energy Today. This is your host, Steve Leeds. It's Monday, January 15th, and we are broadcasting from the Mile High City, lovely Denver, Colorado. It's a cold morning, light snow falling, and cloudy. 21 degrees is estimated to be the high today, so it's a chilly winter day here in Denver. You'll notice a few changes to the broadcast this morning. First of all, there'll be several segments. The first segment will be a technical overview of the energy markets. So I will give some information on current prices in the market for, say, crude oil, natural gas, gold, you know, just various commodities of interest. And then follow that up with a discussion about why we should care. Who cares about energy? Who cares about the price of oil and gas and at the global level? And so I'll give you a few talking points on why we should all care. It should be obvious to some of us, of course. Some of us, our paychecks depend on it. And others, your paychecks depend on it. You know, how much you spend for utilities, airline flights, gas for the car, homes, heating, you know, a whole plethora of reasons to care. So then we'll follow that up with a discussion of global supply demand, which sounds a little dry, but again, it all is what goes into the price equation. If you have a product that is in great demand and there's low supply, prices are high. And if you have plenty of supply and not much demand, then prices are low. And so I'm going to discuss, where our industry is within that supply-demand curve. You know, we'll discuss how we use energy, you know, what percentages go into different industries, what the trends are, how different countries you have different supply-demand quotients, and how that affects the overall prices of oil and gas. Without further ado, let's get started. So the main prices we follow, we being the oil and gas industry, are the price of West Texas crude oil, and this is the price per barrel, which is a 42-gallon barrel, and also Brent crude, which is North Sea crude, again, per barrel, price per barrel. So this morning, West Texas crude, which is what matters to us here in the U.S., is up a little over 20 cents a barrel to $64.52. Brent crude is down just a little bit, 3 cents to $69.84. So they've got about a $5 per barrel differential on North Sea crude. The history, just to give you a little background on the history of crude oil, the price, and again, remember that in the next segment, we'll talk about why, you know, I'll get off this technical summary and talk about why this is important. So in 1983, price of crude oil was about 30 bucks a barrel, and in 2002, the price was $26 a barrel. So it just hovered right around in that $25 to $30 per barrel range for many, many, many years, and going back before then, I'm sure. And then from 2002 until up to 2008, mid-year 2008, the price went from $27 a barrel up to $140 a barrel. So what that did was that brought in a lot of investment money. Lots of people saw crude prices skyrocketing and figured, well, this rocket's just going to keep going. Brought in a lot of money. So what we did as an industry is we use that money to find massive amounts of crude oil in what is called unconventional resources. So that's tight you'll see terms like tight gas, tight sand, shale oil. You know, that's the big one. Shale oil has put the U.S. industry on the map. So, crude hit an all-time high in 2008 of around $140, $143 a barrel. 6 months later, January 2009, the price of the product of crude oil, a barrel of crude, had dropped from $143 to $43, actually $41.68 per barrel. So that in 6 months, our revenue source, our product, went from $140 down to $40, which is precipitous. It was tough, needless to say. From there, from 2009 until 2014, we had a price rally that brought us back, gradually brought us back to a little over $100 a barrel. And then once again, we added many rigs, drilled a lot more wells, figured we were back on another rally, and so we put all that investment money back to work, created too much supply, the price dropped to $48 a barrel, and ultimately down to 33 a barrel in 2016. So from in 2 years, we dropped to our lowest point, which was recently, which was a little over $33 a barrel. So we are now back to 64. This morning we're at now at 64.45. So that gives you a brief history of crude oil, which will set up some further discussion. So anyway, the other thing we look at is natural gas, which this morning, and that's a critical one that we can talk about. Natural gas is down to a little over $3, $3.149 this morning. So that's it for the prices and the fundamentals. Next, let's talk about why we should care. What does oil do for you? How do you see the impact of oil around you? And what happens when prices go up and prices go down? See you on the other side. Oil is the lifeblood of the global economy. Oil is the fuel for most forms of transport, fuel to heat and light our homes, and is a key component in medicines, synthetic fabrics, perfume, etc. Between 1880 and 1940, America was the largest producer and exporter of oil in the world. From 1950 on, as America prospered and our energy demands increased, we became an oil importer, a net oil importer, and we turned to the Middle East, as did most of the world. In 1973, oil became a political weapon. OPEC price hikes and an oil embargo created fuel shortages and economic chaos in the world. The U.S. government responded with price controls and energy conservation policies, which had limited success. So that's an intro to a book that an associate of mine is writing, Jack Kerfoot. He runs a blog called Energy Solutions or Catastrophe and does a great job of providing information on oil and gas as well as renewables and alternative energy sources. So what we know is that energy brings prosperity. The more prosperous countries of the world have either an internal energy source, like the Middle East or the U.S., or they have the money to import oil into their countries. And energy drives prosperity, it drives creature comforts in life. If you're inside right now, you're in a home that was built based on petroleum-based products, you're heating your house on some kind of source that is likely petroleum-based or fossil fuel-based. Even the electric cars get plugged in and charged by likely either a coal-fired or natural gas fired electric generation plant. So energy gives us a very, very nice lifestyle and creature comforts, and most of the world would like to have those same creature comforts and lifestyle: indoor heating, indoor lighting, electricity for fans, space heaters. And when we look at heating sources, energy sources, the primary ones, as I mentioned earlier, are fossil fuel based. So that would be coal, natural gas, and crude oil. I think that's about 70 some percent of the energy generation in the world is based on those. I'd have to check that specific number, but let's just say the vast majority is coal based and natural gas and crude oil based. And that's because those are the cheapest. Coal is the cheapest and most efficient energy source. And when I say efficient, I talk about something that we label energy intensity. So that's essentially, in layman's term, the biggest bang for the buck. So coal, when you burn coal, you get it's the cheapest, and we get the most energy out of that. Natural gas would be second. Now, natural gas is beginning to supplant coal as the primary energy generation fuel, which is great because natural gas is much cleaner than coal. I know the guys out there with the coal will probably argue that, but it's a fact. And we have a very long supply now of natural gas. So that's a good thing, in that we can start trading out coal-fired electric plants for natural gas-fired, and it creates a much cleaner environment. So anyway, there you have it. That's a segment on why you should care about oil and gas. The next one, I'll talk about some of the global fundamentals and how what different industries draw different demands and different percentages of the energy market. And again, I just want to give you a general background of the energy industry. So I appreciate your time, and we'll see you again. So finally this morning, I'm going to talk about the end users of energy. Where does this go? Who uses what energy? How much of it? And how does that look as we move forward down into the future? So right now, the top energy users are transportation, industrial, buildings, and electricity. So those are in order of use. Transportation is over 50%, industrial, which is power equipment, chemical feedstocks, industrial heat is at 36%, followed by buildings, which mainly use liquefied petroleum gas, LPG, to provide space heat where there's no natural gas infrastructure. And then finally, electricity. And in the net share of electricity generation, it's primarily coal, still coal, followed by natural gas. Renewables are coming on, and renewables, we also include hydropower. So that's hydropower is a large source of electricity for power generation. And nuclear is still in there. Nuclear is on the decline and kind of flattens out when you look at the next 20 to 30 years. Coal is decreasing, finally, and this is global. This is not U.S. We'll talk about U.S. in another broadcast. But globally, coal is still big because that's the cheapest, most available energy source. Cheap is a key one. Everybody wants cheap energy. Everybody wants low gas prices. Everybody wants low airline prices. Everybody wants free shipping. All of that is all based on inexpensive, cheap energy. And right now, globally, the cheapest is still coal, which is why it's the largest used. So anyway, real quick, in renewables, we consider hydropower, which is the big one, the dams, big dams, followed by wind, solar,
and geothermal. And then there's just other, which would be, you know, who knows what small percentage of other. Let's see if I can find that here. Anyway, renewable energy sources increase the most over the next 25 years. So, of course, this is the energy transition. We're moving from coal to renewables, to biomass, to some non-carbon-based energy source. That's the idea. We're moving that way. We will get there. It might be a generation or two, but we're getting there pretty quick, and technology is also driven by energy. You know, technology, the more technology-driven countries are the ones that have a unlimited supply of energy, in a sense, or plenty of energy. This is where technology gets developed. So that technology will ultimately bring us into whatever the next energy source is. Every time, you know, you go back through history, every time we jump to a new energy source, and it gets back to that energy intensity factor, that we find an energy source that is more efficient, and the next one will have less of a carbon footprint, which is a good thing. Just like natural gas, as we move from coal-fired electricity generation to natural gas, which we can do now, that technology is here and now and taking place. And one of the reasons it's taken place is because the price of natural gas has come down tremendously because we found so much. If you recall the supply-demand equation. So we have a huge supply of natural gas for a long time, so it'll make us a much cleaner world until we eventually get to whatever that next energy source is. Fuel cells, solar, wind, some combination of geothermal and hydropower, whatever that looks like. We don't know what it looks like yet, but we'll get there. We're on that way. So anyway, that's about enough for all the facts and figures this morning. I hope you didn't find it too dry and boring. Again, as a broadcast goes on, we'll get into some more entertaining topics, I hope. So anyway, I appreciate your time and have a wonderful day, and we'll talk to you again soon. Bye for now.